Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is number 857B, and we really have a great guest, A.J. Chari. He's Director of Clinical Research in the Multiple Myeloma Program and Associate Director of Clinical Research at Cancer Clinical Trials Office at the Tisch Center Institute of Mount Sinai in New York and at the ICON. We've heard a lot about Carl ICON lately at the ICON School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Before we get to talk to him, just to remind you, you can write us questions, talk about guests, write guests' names as suggestions to us or topics at youdocs@gmail.com. Well, we're proud to welcome Dr. Chari, who has made some major insights into the treatment of multiple myeloma. Dr. Chari, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And am I pronouncing your name right, Dr. Chari?
Yep, perfect.
So AJ, as I said, he's trained in California. I didn't say that, but trained at that horrible place in Inferior, California, for those of us who trained at UCSF. He trained at UCLA, a great school, and went bicoastal to get to New York, where he practices at Mount Sinai. Tell us, what is multiple myeloma and why should any of us care?
So I think one of the reasons I specialize in multiple myeloma, it's very gratifying to treat. And it's because when patients are diagnosed, they're actually quite sick, and they can have, the symptoms are abbreviated with the acronym CRAB, where C stands for high calcium or hypercalcemia, R for renal or kidney problems, A for anemia, and B for bone disease. And sometimes I is also thrown in there for recurrent infection. But you can imagine when you
present
with...
So they could be crabby.
Exactly. You got it. So when patients are diagnosed, they can be quite sick from all of those symptoms. And with treatment, and whenever I'm teaching students, residents, fellows, I always give this case of a gentleman who came to see me, who was this high-powered executive, who came in a wheelchair because of the bone pain. And within 4 to 6 months, he was back walking and on an elliptical and back to work eventually. And it's very uncommon in myeloma, in medicine, to have that kind of a response to treatment. Perhaps some of our surgical colleagues are more used to that, but it's quite gratifying to see patients not only living longer, but better.
And this disease is a disease of, if you will, the bone marrow and of cells that come from the bone marrow in the white cell area. Tell us this is unusual. It's not a leukemia that affects the leukocytes, but it is another white cell variety, correct?
Correct. So basically, if somebody presents with those crabby symptoms, and there's a lot of other features that may trigger somebody to order it, but they would order tests that show there's a protein abnormality in the blood, and that protein is essentially an antibody. And since antibodies come from plasma cells, that is the hallmark of multiple myeloma and related conditions, where, as we know in cancer, one of the defining features of cancer is it's a clonal overproduction of a cell, meaning one particular cell has grown out of control. And in myeloma, the cell that does that is called the plasma cell, which we all have, and it lives in the marrow, and its job is to make antibodies. But when this cell becomes malignant and goes awry, it produces these useless proteins, but it's all the same protein, and that's what makes this cancer relatively easy to monitor compared to a lot of our other solid tumor colleagues who have to keep doing imaging. But luckily, in myeloma, we can often tell how a patient's cancer is doing by monitoring those protein levels over time when they're getting treated.
And so it comes from an unusual white cell called a plasma cell, and you said they had crabby symptoms, which, at least if I'm quoting you correctly, which included something called something that affected the kidney, as well as, I guess that was the R, the renal,
mm-hmm.
As well as some other systems. why would it affect the kidney?
So nephrologists will often screen for myeloma and related conditions because the proteins, these antibody levels that are, when they're high, those antibody levels can interfere with kidney function in different ways. But what a patient might notice would be foamy urine. And basically, when, and it's, some patients have described it looks like the head of beer in the toilet where the urine is just very, very frothy. And that reflects protein being spilled into the urine, which normally shouldn't occur. And depending on where in the kidney that damage occurs, different kind of proteins can get spilled. But in the typical myeloma patient, the light chains, our so-called Benz-Jones proteins, are overproduced from those plasma cells in the marrow. They get pushed into the blood, and then when they get filtered through the kidney, they glom up the kidney, the so-called tubules of the kidney, and that can lead to renal failure. And the more protein that there is in the blood, the more, the higher the likelihood of that there will be renal dysfunction. And so that's why nephrologists will often screen patients for myeloma and related conditions when they see people with unexplained kidney problems.
And in fact, us run-of-the-mill internists, when we get a urinalysis and see protein that's high, worry a lot about multiple myeloma, as that's one of the diseases that can cause that protein in the urine, and one of the reasons we screen urines for protein. Tell me about the other, at least that's why I do it. Is that rational? I should ask you that, or am I...
I think we depend on internal medicine folks to be the gatekeepers because not everybody can see the consultant, and we need the physicians who are seeing the patient's frontline to think about these conditions. Otherwise, they'll never get to the right person. But one of the important things for internal medicine doctors to remember, though, is that the single urine specimen, so-called the dipstick, is very good at picking up the protein called albumin, which can occur in some kind of condition, some of the conditions that we deal with, like amyloidosis. But the light chains that are overproduced in myeloma and related conditions may be missed by the dipstick. And that's why we need a special test in the urine called urine protein electrophoresis and immunofixation. And because, you know, let's face it, no patient wants to do a 24-hour urine collection. It's not very glamorous to be collecting your urine at work. Recent studies show, though, that if you do the combination of that protein electrophoresis testing in the blood as well as immunofixation and do what's called a serum-free light chain, you capture the vast majority of patients with the abnormal protein productions, and the sensitivity is almost 95%. So, however, it's still a good idea to do the urine testing in people who have known kidney problems to make sure that that's not being missed.
What do the other letters in CRABBE stand for?
Sure. So, the C is for hypercalcemia. So the symptoms that a patient might experience from high calcemia, there's an old mnemonic that medical students are taught, which is bones, moans, stones, and psychiatric overtone. That means bone pain that's persistent, not just in the morning and stiffness like arthritis and cold weather, but constant everyday progressive pain. Moans can be constipation leading to abdominal discomfort due to the high calcium. Stones, patients can pass kidney stones, and last, psychiatric overtones. High calcium levels can lead to confusion, and often family members are the ones who pick that up. Obviously, confused patients may not always even know that they're confused. So hypercalcemia is often can be detected either in the emergency room or by internal medicine doctors, and also, endocrine doctors sometimes would be called to see those patients, and those are probably the areas that would prompt a screening test for a myeloma to be performed. And now, then we talked about the R for renal, the A for anemia. Anemia is very common, in particular people who have both kidney dysfunction. Anybody who has kidney dysfunction will also have concurrent anemia because the hormone that makes the red cells produce more blood is called erythropoietin, and that comes from the kidney. So if the kidney is impaired, people can be more anemic. So often those go hand in hand, and I would encourage internal medicine doctors and primary care physicians, if you have a patient with both anemia and renal insufficiency, it's not unreasonable to at least do a one-time screening for multiple myeloma to make sure that's not being missed. And then lastly, the B for bone pain or bone lesions, that can be worked up by orthopedic doctors who see an unusual fracture. It could be worked up by endocrine doctors who are evaluating people for osteoporosis or thinning of the bones that seems out of proportion to the patient's age. Or again, it could be picked up on incidental scans or primary care physicians who are working somebody up for back pain. And so that's basically the CRAB. And then the infections, it's uncommon for infections alone to be the primary presenting symptom, but we do see, because remember that those plasma cells are part of our immune defense system, and if they're not working properly, people can be at higher risk for recurrent bacterial infections, particularly the respiratory and urinary tract. And so allergists and immunologists sometimes do antibody testing and find those patients and refer them to us as well. But that's basically the CRABBY. And then the one other specialty I would add that often does testing for myeloma and related conditions is neurologists, because these same proteins that we've been talking about, the antibodies, can interfere with nerve function and cause neuropathy, which is basically numbness, tingling, or burning, sometimes even weakness. And so often neurologists will screen for these conditions if they don't know what's going on, because that can also present with that. Plasma cell disorders can lead to neuropathy as well.
Now, let me go and ask a couple of other questions, if we can, related to the excitement in this field. The reason you agreed to come on today was there is real excitement relating to treatment and what it means not only for this disease but some other diseases. Tell us about, say, you head this clinical trial group on multiple myeloma and also are really involved with a lot of other cancer clinical trials at Mount Sinai and the Icahn School of Medicine. Tell us about this excitement in cancer and especially in this area.
Well, you're right. Myeloma is very exciting cancer to be involved in because the pace of research is really unprecedented. And just maybe to put it simplistically, what's happened till now is basically in the 60s and 70s, we only had two drug classes to treat this cancer, which was steroids and conventional chemo. And this was often considered very advanced cancer that people didn't do well with, and it was kind of terminal and grim prognosis. Since then, we've had four new drug classes added called the immunomodulatory drugs, so-called IMIDs, proteasome inhibitors, drugs that modify genes called HDAC inhibitors, and then monoclonal antibodies. So we have had four new classes of drugs, and within those four classes, in just 1 year alone, in 2015, four single drugs were approved. Four different drugs were approved, distributed over three of those classes that I just mentioned. So for a cancer that's relatively uncommon, it's dwarfed by the big four of breast, prostate, colon, and lung, this is a relatively uncommon cancer. It's the second most common cancer of the blood and bone marrow system after lymphomas. But when you have such a relatively uncommon cancer, to have so much progress and four drugs approved in 1 year, that's really unprecedented. And thanks to all of those drugs, patients are living longer and longer. And we even have been able to pick now, using certain risk stratification systems, there's a group of patients that are so low risk, we don't even know how long they live yet because they just keep living. So we can't even give a number. Now, at the other extreme, though, is we do have patients that still need a lot of new drugs and new therapeutic approaches because the high-risk patients, frail, elderly, kidney failure, we still have to do better for these patients because they're still not doing as well as those low-risk patients. And one of the most exciting new developments is the what's called CAR-T, which stands for chimeric antigen receptor T cells. And this is a very exciting armamentarium and therapeutic approach that already has shown progress and activity. And in fact, Novartis has a CAR-T that was just recently reviewed very favorably by the FDA and for pediatric leukemia. What basically this technology involves is you take patient's blood and filter it out using a machine, and we separate out a component called the T cells. The T cells are very important for attacking cancers as well as infections. Those T cells are then genetically modified so that their receptors are tweaked, and they go after whatever that patient's cancer is. So it's basically patient-specific product. It's not, it's not just some random blood product that you'd get off, blood or a platelet transfusion, but it's specifically designed for that patient. And those T cells, after they're modified, are put back into the patient after some chemotherapy. And once those cells kick in, they can really go after the cancer. And so this so-called CAR-T, it's part of a new era of immunotherapy or immunologic therapies in cancer. And what was really exciting at this year's clinical oncology meeting, American Society of Clinical Oncology, so-called ASCO, there were two presentations using this CAR-T platform, one by this company called Bluebird, which is a U.S.-based company, and the second by another company called Legend, which is based in China. They both presented their data. Now, admittedly, the numbers are not huge, but the Bluebird platform had 21 patients, and it's very important to talk about who these people were. These are patients with myeloma who'd had myeloma for many years, and typically about 5 years, and they had seven prior treatments. So they had progressed through seven different lines of therapy. And so many of these people really had no remaining standard of care or FDA-approved product. And this CAR-T approach resulted in outstanding results. Every single patient responded. And equally important, though, is not just that they responded, but how durable the response is. And in the patients who had been followed for a long period of time, there were no relapses in the patients that had been seen further out, some approaching 6 months and even a year. The Chinese version had 35 patients with not as heavily pretreated, but also very impressive results, 94% response rate, and again, very durable. In fact, five patients had not relapsed 1 year, more than 1 year out of the treatment. And so what's amazing about this approach is, one, these patients are heavily treated myeloma patients who didn't have a lot of options remaining. And number two, this was a single intervention. So it's a one-time intervention that led to durable responses. So this is really a game changer, and certainly it needs to be studied further. It's always important when you're talking about new therapy to not only talk about the benefit but the risk. When these cells are infused, they can create havoc and have a syndrome called cytokine release syndrome, which is when the immune cells are attacking the cancer and perhaps other bystander cells, and then those that process releases chemicals or cytokines that can cause quite significant illness, like oxygen dropping, kidney function problem, blood pressure dropping. And so this is appropriately initially being studied in patients who have very limited other options, but once the risk-benefit profile is tweaked, there's an expectation that this may move earlier and earlier in the treatment of myeloma patients. So I think that is the number one thing that people are most interested about, because this is really a game changer given the outstanding results seen so far.
Wow. So this is really, and it pertains to a lot of cancers, not just this one.
Yeah, the key is the process is the same of taking the T cells out, modifying the receptors and putting them back. What's cancer specific is what are the T cells going to be attacking? And that to do that, every disease, you need to pick some kind of protein that is ideally expressed on the cancer but not on the rest of the body, so that these T cells are really, you know, targeting. It's like a sniper. Instead of just shooting randomly, these T cells are going after the cell of interest, which is the cancer cell, and hopefully sparing the rest of the body. So that specificity comes by picking the right protein for the right cancer.
Now, we already got an email to someone I tweeted about this, and they said, how expensive is it? It must be expensive if you have to take things out and give it back.
You know, this is a very important question. I think the American Society of Clinical Oncology has now asked pretty much all the plenary or the important abstracts that are going to be reviewed. They're asked to present risk data, benefit data, but also financial and cost data. No question this is going to be an expensive treatment, but I think we have to keep in mind two things. Number one is this is an unmet medical need. These are patients who potentially had no other recourse left. You know, some of these patients, again, had seven prior lines of therapy and were refractory to all available drugs. So given that, and the second issue is that that's a one-time intervention. It's, unlike a lot of our other drugs which we use, are given continuously, and therefore maybe they may be less expensive in a given time period, but the need to give it continuously over time is definitely going to add to the expense. So when you factor those in, first of all, this product has not yet even been commercially available, so we don't even know what the price will be. Obviously, that is important to figure out. But when we think about cost, we need to think about it for in the terms of how much cost is it per additional year that the patient is living. And so the fact that some of these patients may not even be alive today because they had no other options, I think that would be very encouraging to in terms of pointing towards a favorable cost to amount of life gained ratio. And then the fact that it's a one-time intervention is also going to be encouraging. But again, at the end of the day, we will need to see what it is priced at. But clinical trials, by definition, are expensive, and this is why it's so important that patients and caregivers think about clinical trials, because every single drug that's been approved had to go through this rigorous clinical trials approach reviewed by the FDA. And it can take anywhere from 8 to 15 years to take a drug or an intervention from the laboratory to the bedside and get approval. So that expense has to be recouped in some way, but obviously the exact recouping is where the details lie in terms of what is appropriate for us as a society.
I want to thank you very much. We've been talking with Dr. A.J. Chari, who is the Multiple Myeloma Program Director and the Associate Director of Clinical Research at the Cancer Clinical Trials Office at the Tisch Institute at Mount Sinai, and Associate Professor of Medicine, Hematology and Medical Oncology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. Dr. Chari, I can't thank you enough both for advancing science as much as you have and explaining it as with such enviable lucidity as you have done today. Thanks very much. And for our listeners, we'll be back next week with another hopefully guest as great as Dr. Chari is. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual radio podcast. Download us and rate us often. Thanks very much.